talking about games, aren't we?
Pubs and games.
Pubs and games. All right, let's get into it because we could faff about for a long time. Hello, ladies.
Faff.
We could faff about, boys. Don't you dare demean me with your silliness. And with that, welcome to the Board Game Gateway, episode number 25. No, I can't do that.
Faffing about.
Can I do that? I think I can do that.
Sure.
Why not?
Just catch me off.
I gotta keep you guys on your toes. Alright. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Board Game Gateway podcast, episode number 25. We are your entryway into the world of board games, tabletop games, and fun times. My name is Neba, and I am your host for this evening, and I am joined by two lovely gentlemen on these mics. To my right and directly in front of me, we have Mr. Blake.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
And Mr. Ralph.
Hi, everyone.
I did actually realize that I said to my right and my
front,
and then I totally reversed you in the reverse order.
He's already drinking.
yes, apparently out of my Jurassic Park cozy. There you go. So anyway, on tonight's episode, we are going to be having a chat about a couple of games. We're going to be talking about Clank Catacombs. We're going to have a chat about Great Western Trail. Ralph's got the second edition, and we decided to have a play of that, and we'll give our thoughts. We also are going to have a look at our Gateway Game of the Week, which this week is Skull. And the reason why we're doing that as our Gateway Game of the Week, because we thought, let's talk about things at the pub. But before we get to that, those topics, we are one man short once again. Mr. Matt is no longer again here with us. Unfortunately, we think he's got the vid, cough,
possibly.
The 19.
That's what he says. I think he's just avoiding me.
You think he's avoiding
you? I do. And you know what, Matt, if you're listening to this, I sincerely hope you are. I think you're avoiding me, and I want to bring you back. So I've written you a little something, an ode to Matthew, if you will. To our dear friend, I've written a little bit of a poem for you. So,
do we need to put in some background music for you
now? Yes, definitely. If you could edit some in future Neighbor, if you could.
I love giving myself more work. Let's get to it.
All right. So an ode to Matthew. Our friend Matt has the sniffles. He's tired. He said he'd be here tonight. He lied. Why, oh why, is Matt at home in bed? Why couldn't he be here with us instead?
What? Oh, sorry. That was very insightful then.
That was very beautiful, Blake.
Matthew, please come back to us. I don't know what I've done, but every time I'm here, you're not. So I miss you, buddy. So come back to us.
Please come back to us.
I don't know if he wants to come back now.
That was
absence makes the heart grow fonder.
It goes fronder.
It grows.
God, we're in top form tonight, guys. This is going to be a good one.
We're talking about drinking games, or not quite drinking games today.
Games that could be, we can see how it goes. Anyway, before we get on to that, I do want to say, Blake, it's lovely to have you back. We missed you in last week's episode. Yeah. You missed out with our special guest, Anthony, and resident Briscola expert. That was a great episode. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah, it was heaps good. I sent the link round to the podcast to a bunch of the family members, and I got some great feedback. My sister said that was a good podcast, and then in a separate chat my mom said that was a good podcast. That was really sweet of them.
Hi, Mom. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I've got cousins on the Central Coast that really enjoyed it. They actually played Billionaire before. I can't wait to break that one out. That will be a lot of fun. But my dad actually said I did Briscola a disservice.
Oh.
Or rather, the deck of cards specifically. I said there was only two games that you can play.
There's three, isn't there?
Apparently there's seven games. Oh. That you can play with them.
Okay.
So to think about it, these cards have been around for quite some time. There's only seven games you can play with them. It's still quite small, but...
I like to think of it as I'm a very positive kind of guy, and what I've just heard is that your dad has given us six more episodes worth of content that we'll be able to record in the future. So
I asked him, we should have got you on the podcast. What do you reckon?
But, next time.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to wait and see on that one. But he taught me there's a variant of five hand poker that you play with them, and he taught me that, and I'm like, yeah, we need to play this one. This sounds great.
Yeah, I can imagine. Look, yeah, the cards have been around for ages, so I think there's obviously plenty that we have not talked about or missed out on. So I think, you know, like, I'm looking forward to getting Anthony back on, teaching us another game, or hell, if your parents want to get on. if your mum would like to join us for an episode, she's more than welcome.
Something tells me if she does come on, it won't be cut off at an hour. And I mean that with all love. But
that's fine. That's fine. That can be a special. That can be. We can break it up. That can be a three-parter or four-parter. I don't know.
She'll give us a break.
I'm down.
Oh, okay. Anyway, let's get into the games that we've been playing over the week. And the first game that we want to have a chat about. So we're going to chat about Great Western Trail. We're going to do this one first up. And the reason we're going to talk about that is because the second edition is now out and about in the wild.
I did an unboxing video on that on our channel.
Yeah, we did. It's on our YouTube channel. So if you'd like to see that, go over to youtube.com and search for Board Game Gateway. You'll be able to see Rouse unboxing as well as some other content. But we decided to play it because we have talked about it on the podcast. We really enjoyed how it was Blake's introduction into the world of board gaming. But there are a few tweaks to the rules, and we just decided it was time to play the game. So, Blake, do you want to try and give a brief rundown of what Great Western Trail is for the listener at home?
Oh, wow.
I know I'm putting you on the spot there, but look, I always do the intro. I always do the things.
Maybe a brief one.
Yeah, I mean, Great Western Trail is one.
Twail.
Twail.
It's the Looney Tunes edition.
All three of us have had it. It's all good. All three of us have had the faux pas already. We've got it out of the way.
In an Elmer Fudd coming out there.
Yeah.
Great Western Trail's a little bit of a difficult one for me because I still don't think I'm quite picking this game up, and I think it really reflected it in my score. But look, basically, Great Western Trail. You've got a game board in front of you, and what you're going to be trying to do is moving your piece up this game board from the starting through little points of interest, buildings on the map, all the way to the end where you're going to deliver a hand of cows. Now your starting hand, I believe it's
Four cows, I believe. It's basically a big cattle drive.
Yeah, so you're going to have a hand of cows, and you're going to try to get to the end of this board, and you're going to sell off these cows. Each cow has a numerical value. The only thing is, you can only sell unique cows. So if you have two orange cows in your hand or two white ones, they will only count for one card. So that's the basic drive of this game. The meat of the game is where you're going to be adding to this board, so either adding your buildings, you're either going to be moving your train up the side of the board, which helps making your shipments or deliveries cheaper for you, or your the cattle, so the cattle market, where you're going to be buying more cattle to increase the size of the value of your deck. You know, more unique cows in your deck is going to increase how much you can sell at the end. That's the basic meat and bones of the game. But this game still eludes me. I just can't seem to pick it up. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
This game is, you've given a very basic overview, and what we're not kind of giving to the audience at the moment is the idea of, so the Great Western Trail, or the trail that we're moving from the start to the finish of this trail, is basically getting longer every time that we do it. Because it's, if you imagine, basically it's kind of more of like an advanced snakes and ladders. Start here, get to the end as fast and as efficient as possible. The only difference is you can't go backwards in this game. But every time that someone builds a building, the trail gets longer, because you're only allowed to move three buildings at a time at the start of the game. So each building has a separate power and different abilities that you can do. So you can only activate one building a turn. So I know that Blake is going to building X and he is buying up the cattle every turn. Well, I'm going to chuck a building in front of that building. So now he has to pay me a toll just for passing over my building, and he's not allowed to use any of the abilities that are on my building. And on top of that, oh, look at this. Everything costs money, wouldn't you know it? And they're very expensive. So every player also has a player board in front of them, and you're trying to buy workers to make things cheaper, such as building buildings or moving your train further along the track, or, you know, or buying cattle, because cattle ain't cheap. Cattle's expensive, y'all. I tell you that much.
And I think that brings up one of the more unique and the more interesting points of the game is when you're delivering cattle to certain cities, you can only deliver to each city once. with the exception of Kansas City, although that's negative points, so you don't want to be doing that. But when you deliver to a city, you get to take one disc off that game board, that your own personal player board, which will unlock extra actions or upgraded abilities for you to use.
Mm-hmm.
So abilities such as, you know, getting extra money, something as basic as that, or moving your train up and forward and back to get extra money.
Moving your player further up the game board every turn.
Increasing your hand size limit.
Yeah, increasing the value of your cattle, all this kind of stuff. And at the end of the game, it's what we like to call, what we call in the biz, it's called a point salad sort of scoring system, where it's like, there's not just one point track, there's 10 different ways that you can score points. Objectives, how much, like the cattle that you bought, the buildings that you built, how far your train is up the game board, how many discs you got on, how many workers have you built. You know, so many different, like there is a lot of different ways that you can go about this game. And I understand why it still eludes you. I get it. Ralph, you played it and obviously bought the game as well. I own the first edition. You bought the second edition. But after you unboxed it as well, you went on a bit of a BGA spree with this game. And you've played, you've, as you were telling us, you've played a lot of this game. So, yeah, what are we missing? What do you think? And, you know, give the people the impressions.
So I've overplayed this game, I'd say. I need a bit of a break from the Great Western Trail. There's no more cattle left for me to drive. But when I initially heard of this game, it was a cattle drive, and I got so excited because I thought it was going to be like City Slickers, where it's like, you know, you got your guys from the cities, you're like, yeehaw, I'm driving cattle. But like, that's not quite the game. It's actually like a heavy Euro game.
Yeah.
It's not heavy as some of the other Euro games that we're probably used to playing, but I can't put this on the table in front of a family member and say, let's play this. Because I've got family that loves City Slickers, like my cousin Anthony. He loves City Slickers. We won't be able to play this game. It will be so draining to teach him that, unfortunately. But it's a fantastic game. You can try and do everything, but you won't do everything well. Yep. You kind of do need to narrow your focus a bit.
I think that might be where my issue is. I try to diversify too much, but you get the feeling that it's the game where you have to try and specify what you're trying to do. You know, are you going to build cattle? Are you going to, you know, monopolize buildings? You know, what are you going to try to focus on?
And my advice to players is do what you think is fun, because everything is going to get you points, right? So like, if you want to be that player that gets the best cows and tries to deliver to every single city, don't worry so much about moving your train. Just, you know, buy the best cows before other players, make sure they're all unique, find ways to get them out of your deck or keep cycling through them. And there's a lot of cool things you can do. Like if you want to move your train, there's big points on that train line. If you can keep pushing that train down.
Yeah, you could just keep pushing your train down and rarely worry about actually delivering something.
Because it's not a race to get to the top of the board. You can take your time going up that board and only deliver like four times if you want for the whole game.
In the middle of the game, me and you, Ralph, had delivered five or six times each, and I turned around and looked at me, and he'd only delivered three times. I thought, wow, like he's really taking his time up this game board. It's not a race at all.
It's not.
It's just all about taking it what your pace is, what you're trying to aim to do.
Mm. That's the thing. There's so many different strategies. Like there's actually not a lot of variability in the game because the starting tiles differ where they're actually placed, but they do the same thing every game. The variability is the buildings you can build. You can like play them on an A side or a B side. You can mix and match them just to make games feel a bit different. However, the general strategy of the game is always the same. So when I play that game now, I think, what strategy do I want to try this time? What do I want to do to see if it works? But like, if I see you know, Blake and Nia are actually racing through it and delivering a million times, I'm probably taking that into account with the decisions that I'm making. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I need to speed up how I get points in a way, like, or if I do, I need to keep matching their pace, or can I afford, like, it's interesting to try different strategies. But like I said, I love this game, but I think I've overplayed it.
Yeah, look, the game plays it. We played in about, we only played in about an hour.
It was way quicker this time.
It was like an hour and 50, I think we played in. The first time we played it, we played it at 3, but the first time we played it took us 3 and a bit.
Yeah.
So we, like, but again, there were still moments of, what do I actually do here? What I do love about the game is that the actual trail as well does have these like diverging paths. So it's all like one trail, but there is like, I can either go left here or I can go right here.
Oh, you got it right.
Oh, well, like, if I go left, there's going to be all these hazards, and those hazards are going to cost me money, and I have to pay that to the game board. But if I go to the right, I've got a Ralph and Blake have both put buildings there, and I'm going to have to give them money. So would I rather give them money or lose a bit more money to the hazards?
Yeah.
So there's these choices that you have to make, and actually building position is actually really important. I mean, I made a stuff up once where I put a building down before you two, and you went, oh, well, he's definitely going to go down that track now, so I'm going to put my building in front of his building. Yeah. And then I had to pay you a toll anytime that I wanted to go.
And it ended up being kind of redundant, because every time all of us went down that path, we all had to pay to each of you.
Exactly right. So it was all kind of a net zero there. But the game itself, you, as you said, gives you so many options, but you have to, you kind of have to, you know, really knuckle down on one. Like, I went big on the cattle market, and at the end, I didn't know how well, and I don't realize you thought how well I was doing, and then all of a sudden, I dropped 42 points just on cows that were in my hand. One thing that we haven't actually talked about is the objective system is really cool, which
is, it is
every time you pick up, so you start with the game with one basic objective card, and that could be something as simple as, hey, deliver to this place and this place, or hey, get rid of two black hazards on the map somewhere, right? Rockfall hazards, okay. Very simple, get you 3 points. But throughout the game, you can pick up more objective cards. Those objective cards go into your hand of cows, and then they start to clog up your deck. Now, throughout the game, you can, at any point when they get to your hand, commit to it. You can say, that's it, right? I'm committing to this objective card, take it out of my hand and slam it down on the table. And then you are now committing to that objective card. If you get it, you get the points. But if you don't, you get a negative point value. So you're taking that risk. However, what I did is I realized, well, I'm just going big on cows, and I kind of big on cows and hazards. But you can score objective cards that are just in your hand at the end of the game. You can clog up your deck with as many of these objectives as you want. And then you can just choose, oh, I can clear that, and I can clear that, and I can clear that, and just get these victory points.
Yeah.
And that's one of those weird kind of things where you just like, oh man, but if I take that and I don't finish it, it's like, it doesn't matter. You don't have to commit to any objectives unless you actually take them out of your deck. And I think that's a very cool mechanic, because it's like, well, do you want to keep it lean and nimble to have cows for delivery? Or do you just like me, I bloated mine up and just said, I don't care, just get me any and all cows in my market. That's all I want. And there's these really cool things. I think we'll start to wrap it up on Great Western Trail, but what are your, you know, final thoughts on it after, you know, this is now the second time you've, no, third time I think you've played it.
I think I've played it three or four times, but none too recently. And I think what's interesting is we mentioned it in a, you know, closing podcast last year about how much we've changed as gamers, even just, you know, since I started playing a few years ago. But the game from then, you know, being my first game and, you know, playing maybe one or two times in the coming months after that, I really enjoyed the game back then. It was a lot of fun. It feels a little bit different to be playing it again now that I'm more experienced. I don't dislike the game by any means. I have a lot of fun playing it. I get the feeling, though, I don't think that this game overtakes. I think I'd rather be playing something else than this game. Maybe it's just because it hasn't clicked for me. Maybe I'll have that light bulb moment. But
maybe you won't.
I think one of the detractors for this game for me is, like you said, you feel like you want to be playing something like Cities, because like that theme feels a little bit loose for me on this one.
Yep.
It's I feel like if you with your hand of cows, that's sort of the only thing, the cattle drive. If you replace those cows with classic cars, aeroplanes, I don't know, houses, any a market of anything, you could almost reprint the entire game and just have that as that theme. I feel the theme feels a little bit loose. It doesn't feel like tied into the gameplay at all.
Sending his airplanes down the Great Western Trail.
DeLoreans.
I really enjoy the theme, but like, I play it with my wife, and the way she puts it is, you have these cattle of four cows, and then you're actually delivering them to a slaughterhouse. And I'm just like, okay, that still works, but I'm like, I don't. Quite, it's not quite the same.
No, they're going to the big farm upstate.
Look, they're still in my hand. So where I get to take them, I'm just taking them for a walk and a nice leisurely train ride back to the start of the Great Western Trail. No, like, I think I agree with you. I can see why, especially knowing you and your taste, I know why you may not be clicking with this game at the moment. But in saying that, also, it's really, if you're not, it these kind of point salad games can feel really loose and goosey. Loosey goosey is what I was trying to say there. I was going to loose, fast and loose with the, you know, how you approach a game. There's not a very like narrow path that you are trying, this tight decision space. It's actually, it's a sandbox. Here's everything.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it? I mean, I really like it. And I actually want to still play a few more. Because, again, now the fact we played it in under 2 hours, I'm like, oh, if it's an under 2 hour game, I'm willing to play that. I will say, though, set up and put down of this game is, especially in the first edition, is a pain in the butt. There's cards here and discs there and stuff there. I mean, that's part of the game, but...
I tell you what, there was one specific edition, just the last thing before we move on to this new edition, that I just found outstanding. And that's your little meeple got a little plastic cowboy hat.
Yeah,
and
it was the good.
Best thing ever. I loved it. Little red cowboy hat, I'm all in. Now that's a theme I can get behind.
Yeah, I really like it, how like the light casts a shadow on the board through the hat. Like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, the upgrades of second edition, I feel, pretty much are all better. Yeah. The setup is a lot more smoother than what first edition had. You get these little baggies that sort of balance the game out as well with all the things that come out onto the Kansas track there. I still really like this game. I love the theme of it, to be honest with you. There's a board game called Western Legends, which is a complete sandbox experience. I don't know. There's just something about a Western theme that I really enjoy. I play a lot of space games, and fair enough, there's games that don't gel with me.
Yeah.
That, you know, are few and far between, to be honest. But yeah, I really enjoy this one. I can play this like constantly.
I'm down for, like I said, I'm down for a game of this anytime, and especially because I'm the kind of person that if I get a puzzle, especially one that I'm not clicking with, I want to solve that puzzle. So it's definitely one that I'm very happy to come back to. I guess my point more was that I think there's other games that I'd rather be playing at that point.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like if you're going for that sub-hour game, like something like Korra that we played, or Terraforming Mars, you know, one of my favorite games.
Definitely not a sub-hour game.
Look, if Great Western Trail, if we can keep playing it in under 2 hours, then I'm like, man, if that's an under 2 hour game, I'd be willing to play it a lot more than I currently have. So. Yeah. Anyway, so that was a Great Western Trail, and now we're going to move on to a game that we've kind of talked a little bit about in the past couple of weeks, but now we finally had a chance to actually play the game in its entirety, and that is Clank Catacombs. Basically, the re-release, or the sequel, I guess you can call it, the sequel of Clank, even though Clank has had a few, like Clank in Space.
Yeah, there's quite a few different versions.
There's a few like Clank acquisitions incorporated, but this kind of feels like the actual spiritual successor to the actual Clank game. It feels like they took what base Clank was and said, okay, here's how we can change the game, and here's how we can make it better. So, Ralph, why don't you take it through what... I know we've done this in a previous podcast, but if you haven't listened to it, why don't you take us through Clank Catacombs for the people at home?
Sure thing, Nate. So, Clank Catacombs is essentially a deck-building adventure game where ourselves, the three of us, so three players, plays up to four. But basically, you're going to dive into a catacomb, and you've got to find artifacts, which is basically treasure. Each treasure has different point values, so you want to go deep into the cave to get the better treasure, and then once you steal an artifact, you actually need to come back out of the cave. But what you do on your turn is essentially you have a deck of 10 cards, everyone starts with the exact same, and you play all the cards in your hand at once. So there's 5 cards in your hand, and some will let you move, others will make noise called clank, and the others will have skill points on there, which will allow you to buy more cards and build your deck during the game. So on a future turn, you can move further or you can do other things. All the cards combo with each other extremely well. That is a very brief synopsis of the game.
I think it's actually, and that's really all you need to kind of understand as well, which is, you know, if you don't know what a catacomb is, it's essentially like an underground tunnel system. And
Graveyard, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's not necessarily a graveyard. Catacombs tend to be, I believe, if you imagine like underneath London, all the different like the old London, like the tunnel systems and stuff, and when like that's kind of what a catacomb is. It's like a lot of those old style of like sewers and things like that is, I think, a really good way to think about it. But they're generally dark, they're generally gloomy, and they've been rumored that you can get lost in them very easily. And this game does take that and runs with it in spades because... the way that you move around the game board is that we start off with a couple of squares, and then all of a sudden I can move out of a square, and then I have to take one from a pile and add it onto the end of this game board. So the game board gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And when we played it, we realized, oh, we're going to need to rotate this 90 degrees because we're jutting it out.
We're running out of table.
So we're going to need to jut it out. And so we did. And then you can see the map. And what's really great about it is that some rooms have got locked pathways. Some rooms have monsters outside of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of surprises in the catacombs itself. Exactly. Yeah.
There's like prisoners that you can release and little, you know, enchantments that you can find and little markets that you can go buy items and things like that, which is great. There's even little like teleporters. So if I'm at one end of the map, I can find a teleporter and take me to another teleporter anywhere else on the map. The dragon, there is a dragon, so that's the monster. That's like the reason with Clank, which is you have health that you have to monitor as well. And you can be eliminated from this game. So if, you know, every time that you play a card that has Clank on it, it goes into a bag, and that bag starts with 20 dragon, black dragon cubes, and then however many cubes of that player. And then every time that a item card comes out with a dragon on it, we have to pull out that however many cubes out of the bag is what we need to at that moment. And if your cube comes out, hey, you just got hit by the dragon who somehow is in every place all at once, or multiple dragons in this catacomb system. And so you have to monitor that as well. So you're trying to heal yourself, trying to keep it on top of your Clank, you're trying to not make noise. And there is a lot of different ways you can play this, as in classic deck builder fashion. Like, you start out really slow and relatively weak, but you can go make yourself really fast. The great thing I really liked about Catacombs is that a lot of the locked pathways you can unlock. But if you unlock it, you unlock it for everyone.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, some people could be trailing each other, but then they, you know, do things. Blake, you got a really interesting power that was just like, that's the other thing. In catacombs, pathways, some of them have arrows. Mm. That means you can only enter the room from this way.
Yep.
Blake, you had a power, though, that just said, yeah, forget that rule. You can just go anywhere you want. That was
the
most
fantastic rule. I could ignore all of the arrows, pathways, and just go wherever I wanted. Didn't help me in the end, though, but...
No, and so, like, I won that one, and I, you know, I got out first, and we had that moment of, you know, there was an interesting moment there where, Ralph, you were the last one remaining in.
Yeah, and, so, like, I've played this game a lot, and I kind of realized I was behind, so I needed to be a bit adventurous and really push my luck to try and win, and I died. So that was the...
Yeah, well, you did die, but you were also... Your character was the one who was actually able to remove a lot of... Like, heal yourself. You were buying cards that could heal yourself. So you actually lasted a lot longer in the dungeon, not because you couldn't get out. You were actually really close to getting out. But you were like, I need to actually do another run. I have to go to one other place and get another piece of treasure because I think I'm too far behind, which it turned out you were. But... That game, at one point, you were just, like, screaming ahead, and you were just, like, figuring out the catacombs, and you were, like, just grabbing stuff. Yeah,
that's because I like when you reveal a tile, you can see the path that comes out, and I like linking them. So, like, I go down one path, and all of a sudden, I shoot down the other end of the table. I love creating that sort of pathway in this game.
Now, Ralph has played a lot of Clank Catacombs. I had played Clank before, but, Blake, you were new to the whole system.
Yeah, no.
What did you think of Clank Catacombs?
I think
Catacombs?
Even in my... list, I had Clank right at the back of my gateway list because I just hadn't played it. This game was fantastic. I really clicked with this game straight away. It's a lot of fun. The sort of procedurally generated maps where, you know, you're able to sort of explore was a lot of fun. You never knew what was coming around the corner, especially for someone who didn't know what cards coming ahead. Sometimes that can be a detriment for a game, not knowing what's coming up, because you know you can't plan properly, you're not sure what to expect. I found that benefited this game. You know, I wasn't sure what was coming around the corner. You know, it's like you're going through the catacombs. You're not sure what's going to come out next. What's the next surprise going to be? All of the cards were, you know, interesting. They were useful. The dragon was a fun mechanic. Especially, it reminded me a little bit of the name eludes me. The Alchemist game. The
Quacks.
Where, you know, you're drawing out of the bag, and I think. It clicked for me, and we're sort of just drawing cubes and just dropping them onto the table. But once you drew them out and you dropped the cubes one at a time, and it created that tension. Like,
yeah,
it's always a lot of fun with that. But no, this game drew me in straight away. The way you can just customize your deck, all the different cards you can make, the different decisions: do I go deeper? Do I not?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I'd recommend this game. Just about anyone.
I really do like what it did over the original, which is that the original has a static map, but then you change the location of some rooms and some treasure location.
Yeah.
But the sequence is always the same. Those rooms are locked. Go down, probably tend to go. This one, I can already see. I'm like, oh, it would be different every single game.
Yeah.
Every game would be different.
The replayability is insane. I really love, like, when you go into certain rooms, you get those little secrets, the tokens with the question mark. Yeah. Like, even that's random. The old game had, like, two on each sort of space, and once they're taken, they're gone.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. But yeah, I love this game. They've taken the formula and just made it so much better.
Mm.
I played this game about a month ago with my friend Damien, who we're organizing to have on the podcast as well.
Yep.
And about 2 weeks later, I went ahead and purchased the game.
Hmm.
Anyways, I had my friend Red over, who we had on the podcast.
He's our very first guest.
Yeah, quite a while ago now. I played it with him. 2 weeks later, I get this random message from him. He said, "Ralph, I did it." And he sends me a screenshot that he purchased Clank Catacombs. And I'm like, I accept no responsibility for this. And he goes, "Ralph, you are directly responsible for 100% of the games I own." I'm like, "Nah, my friend Damien showed me this 2 weeks later. I bought it. Now the curse is with you."
Yeah, it's a really great game. And the great thing about this game as well is it takes the deck building formula that was, you know, basically introduced by Dominion and kind of perfected by it as well. But it gives new players such a easy ramp. Like, it's like, okay, you can either move or you have two coins to buy something or you put some clank.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, well, I guess... Oh, sorry, you like five, up to five skill points. So then I guess I've got five skill points. I'll buy that guy.
Yeah.
What is he? And then you look at him and you go, okay, that's what he does. And you put him in your deck. You end up shuffling and you get it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, oh, I know what this guy does now. And then I buy another card. And I just put him in. And like, so by the end of the game, and I love this about deck builders, is that you are directly, you kind of know what's in your deck because you created it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like you don't need to worry about everything in the shop and everything that Blake has. Oh, I know Blake's a speedy boy. He's been doing a lot of things. I know Ralph can, you know, he can hit things
I can
really
heal
hard.
Really
or
quickly,
he can heal really quickly. And I'm the guy who can just go and attack anything, right? Like, you don't need to know exactly what cards they have. You just kind of get a feeling that he does a lot of movement. All right. Blake moves a lot. Yeah. And I love that about deck builders. I love when you're just like, this is my thing and you're directly responsible for it.
Yeah.
And it started from nothing and you are the one in control of it.
Yeah. And I think the positive with this game and, you know, being able to, I'd recommend this to almost anyone, but what makes it so simple, I think, is unlike a lot of other card games and builders and engines, you know, there's a little bit of that decision space and, you know, for experienced gamers, that's sort of what they'd want where, you know, you're going to have a hand of cards and you're going to pick, do I play this turn? Do I hold off on this card? Or, you know, there's a strategy. I can either do this or this. Whereas this game sort of, you get a hand of five. I'm going to play all five cards, which means I have, like you said, five skill points. I've got three movement and I can, you know, I can pick a direction. It's alleviates that decision space a little bit. It just says, okay, I've got these cards. I can do these actions and you can just sort of go and make it your own. And I think that really levels that gate of entry and to make this game a lot of fun for, you know, for anyone who wants to join the game.
Definitely. I've played this with like my teenage niece and nephew and they got right into it as well. I do want to say this game in particular, there's a lot of new cards predominantly around removing clank. So you're actually not making a lot of noise compared to the previous versions. But some of the tiles have little ghosts on them.
Oh, the ghost.
And then, like, you put a little white cube in the clank area, and when it goes in the bag and comes out on a future attack, that hits every player. So that's kind of like, you can build, like, a really good deck, but it has a really good way to keep matching that tension all the way to the end, which is fantastic. The designer of this game, I think it's Paul Denham, I think, from memory. He designed a game that I'll have to show you guys later called Dune Imperium. Which is in the same sort of Dune franchise, but the game is very similar in that you have five cards. You do things with those cards, but you also have like a reveal step where you play all your cards.
Hmm.
So you can kind of feel like, okay, he's taken the Clank inspiration and put it into this game. You can tell it's the same designer, which doesn't happen a lot where you can tell like, this is the same designer as that. Like, Galaxy Trucker is the same designer as Pictomania. You don't quite feel that, but with this you do, and it's really cool to see.
I want to play Dune Imperium again. Everyone says that it becomes so much better with the expansion.
It does,
like, I kind of bounced off of it on the original. I'm like, it wasn't bad, but there were some guys like, this is the best game ever. And I'm like, it's okay. But like, everyone says no, with the expansion, it completely like fills those holes. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to give it a go.
The expansion does add a lot to it. The base game is still fantastic, but the expansion does make it better.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, we'll leave that for another episode. And so look, I think it's all a thumbs up from around us, from us here at the table. Clank Catacombs is a great game. I wouldn't say it's a gateway game, but it's that definitely that next step. Yeah. I mean, you could say
it's a gateway to deck building for sure.
Yeah, actually, maybe it is. Maybe it is a gateway.
The cards are pretty simple. It's like, it tells you exactly what it does. They all cut. You can't make a bad deck if you tried.
I'll rescind my previous argument. I do actually think, as a deck builder, if you want to get someone into it, this is actually probably a really good first step. In fact, even just from a graphic artistic standpoint, it's probably better than Dominion.
I love how all the cards have like a really bad pun or bad joke to them. Like, there's one called The General, and it's like, I always make good decisions, generally speaking. Yeah. like just silly things like that.
Okay, all right, you talked me into it. It is a good gateway game. I think it can be recommended. Anyway, so speaking of gateway games, we're going to move on from Clank Catacombs. There it is. Clank Catacombs.
You made a foo-poo.
we're going to need a counter this episode.
Probably. Oh, God. So we're going to move from Clank Catacombs to our gateway game of the week, which this week is Skull. And Skull is a great deception bluffing game that is literally played with four coasters. The way that it works is that every player is going to be given four coasters, and when I say coasters, I legitimately mean the game box. They are drink coasters. This game, I believe, if Shut Up and Sit Down is to be believed, was made by like a bikie gang, made infamous by bikie gangs because they used to play it, because you can just play it with coasters, and they used to settle disputes and stuff like that with it. But the game works thusly: you get four coasters. Each three of them will have a flower, and one of them will have a skull. On your turn, you are going to do one of two things. Either put a coaster in front of you, or you're going to say a number. Now, you can only say a number after one coaster is in front of every single player, but you play a coaster, or you can say a number. That number that you say is your call for the round, and you are trying to say how many coasters I can flip before I reveal a skull. The caveat is you have to start with all of your own coasters first. So you have, so if I said, if we all played two different coasters in front of us, that would be six. And I said, I reckon I can reveal two. And Blake says he can reveal three. And then we all pass after that. Blake can then go, okay, he reveals his two coasters, and then he just has to reveal one more, starting from the top of any deck that any pile of coasters that he chooses. If he's correct and he was able to reveal three coasters, he gets a point. Congratulations, Blake. You're already halfway to winning because you only need 2 points in this game.
Excellent.
If you are wrong, though, and you reveal a skull, the player whose skull you revealed will take one random coaster from your hand and get rid of it from the game. So now, instead of having four coasters, you have three coasters. And you may or may not have your skull in front of you now.
Yep.
That's the game. And the first time, I've got to admit, the first time I heard about Skull, I went, I mean, sounds okay. I mean, I don't get the hype. And having just played it at three players, I had the classic moment of, oh, no. Yes. Now I need to buy this game. It's so freaking good. It's so good. It is so good because it is so simple. And it took you about two or three games, Blake. But that second game or third game when you're like, oh, like, you, because it's a bluffing game, right?
Yeah.
So you are trying to read when people have put down skulls, but you're also then trying to get people to bite on a call.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, knowing that I have a skull right in front of me, I'm going to call two. And then everyone then play stops because no more coasters can go down. So then everyone's looking at each other going, can I call three? Do I actually have a skull in front of me? And it is so good. I
think bluffing games are inherently just going to bring that out at a table. And after the first game, you know, I played the first game. I enjoyed my time. I thought that's a neat, you know, neat little game, you know. And then we played the second round, and after a couple of people out, and you feel little traps with some skulls, and it just sort of, the whole game fell into place of, you know, what you're trying to do, how you're trying to get people to bite on your little traps, and it clicked, and I just went, oh no, this game's fantastic.
That third game was brutal for me and Ralph, because you started my went skull, you played a skull initially every time, but then you made the first call one, and then both myself and Ralph bit, yeah, I'll do two. Oh crap. And then I bit for three, because I'm like, there's no way he does it again. But you had your skull sitting there, and we bit, right? And you were like, I'm sitting there just going, are you kidding? Like, how did it happen again?
But the best part about that round was I had bluffed myself.
Yeah.
So I think either you lifted all three of them, revealed my skull, but I think after you flipped up my skull, I even recalled back and said, damn it.
Because you thought it was a flower. Because I thought
I put down a flower, so you read me correctly. I just one-upped you and bluffed myself.
Sometimes I don't even look at what it is until the bidding starts, and then I look at what I've got left in my hand.
It's the all-in play without looking at your hand in poker.
Exactly. But yeah, I've had this game for quite a few years now. Played it so many times. The actual box itself goes to six players, but you can play it with any amount of players you have. We just used a deck of cards, and we had the ace as the skull, and every face card was just a flower.
Yeah.
So it still works just like that. I think my favorite memory of playing this game, we're at I think one of my sister's parties, and there's a lot of young children around, but basically there was five adults playing this game, and one of the little 8-year-old girls in the family said, oh, can I play with you? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So we taught her how to play. She watched us for a round, and then she jumped right in. She won the game twice. She fooled us. She had the best time ever. It was time to go home. She didn't want to stop playing.
Yeah, this is it's a really fun small package. Like, it's the same. The boxes are basically the same size, if not just a bit bigger than Cockroach Poker.
Yeah.
But this game is so much fun. Now, the caveat is you need to like deception bluffing games. If you do not like those sorts of games, I think you'll bounce off this really quick, mm-hmm. because the deception and bluffing aspect is the game.
Yeah, right? You're trying to read other players.
Yeah, you're trying to read. You're trying to then also set little traps. And if you don't enjoy doing that, this is not going to be the game for you. However, in saying that, if you like any sort of deception games, it takes a round or two. But as you said, Blake, when it clicks, yeah. It's like, oh, we only played it at three.
Mm.
So the numbers of, we actually had some really interesting little small interactions, yeah. Where we all put down one, and then someone immediately goes two, because I think one of you has put down a flower, but now I just need to guess which one it was.
Yeah.
And everyone's sitting there going, crap. Or the one moment where I put down one and I just went three. I reckon we've all just put down a flower, and sure enough, we all had, right?
Yeah.
Those moments of crap, right? Thinking, oh, he's just outsmarted me, or those moments. This game has got, it does have player elimination, but at three players, we played through it in 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Per game.
I would really like to experience this game at those higher player counts. So we didn't really get too high in the numbers before people were already calling.
Yeah.
But I feel like once you get 5, 6, 7, 8 players at the table, you're going to start shouting ridiculous numbers. I reckon I can flip 10. 12 coasters without hitting a skull.
And if you can do it, it's so rewarding. Yeah. Honestly, it's fantastic.
Well,
yeah.
What's one of those interesting things about this game, though, is when you do lose your coaster, if you lose your skull, it is so important to keep that information completely hidden. Yeah. Because the moment that someone realizes you don't have a skull, they're like, okay, well, how many does Ralph have? I can always flip Ralph over and I can add that to my bid.
Yeah.
And that's one of those very important things, which is, there was a couple of times where Ralph went, yeah, you know, I lost my skull in the first round. I'm like, no, I didn't. I did not realize that you played that perfectly well.
Yeah.
Because
there was times where I put one coaster down and I opened the bidding at one. it's to bait someone else into taking it. Otherwise, I'm going to win the point anyway. But yeah. I want you to think that I've got my skull then.
Well, you got it once, right? Because you bid one. But because you have to flip over,
it starts with yours. Because
you went, I think Blake and Nebo just both played a skull.
Yeah.
And he was right.
I had.
And so had I, right? So we just went one. And both Blake and I looked at each other and went, ah, shit.
I couldn't say two, because then But I was trying to get Knee to say two. So I said the reason I'm not saying two is I think Ralph's got a skull. So, but Knee didn't bite. We both looked at each other. I think we both had played the skull.
We both absolutely. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. You've got four coasters. I've got three. You can take this hit, right? But that was that moment where you was like, you had 1 point from one coaster.
Yeah.
And that was the
moment. That's so big in the game.
But for me, that was the click moment. That was the moment of, oh, you can be like, you can try and get tricky, but if someone calls you out on your bullshit way too early, you've got to be very, like, the very first coaster matters.
Yeah.
It matters because if someone just goes, yeah, I reckon I can flip four because everyone is like, oh, I'm going to hold onto my skull. Four. Like, oh my God, he just got the point.
Yeah, so, but the components are really good. They're very sturdy coasters as well. The theme is kind of like the Mexican Day of the Dead sort of skulls. But what's really cool is all the colors. So each player has like a color like blue, green, purple, that sort of thing. But all your flowers are different and everyone's skull is different. Like you might have a Viking skull or just a typical Day of the Dead one. It just adds that bit of flavor, that personality to it. It's just a bit more fun.
I loved it. I think the artwork of it is great.
Completely unrelated. How much was this game?
It's actually about the same price as Cockroach Poker. So about 20, 25 bucks. Yeah. I've had just about the same amount of fun as Cockroach Poker with this game. This game is a bit more of a learning curve, I found. The fact that there's player elimination here and not so much in Cockroach Poker doesn't make Skull everyone's taste.
Yep.
Because you only get eliminated with Skull, it's kind of your own fault because you push too hard to try and push for that victory. Mm-hmm. And when you stuff up by hitting someone else's Skull, you lose a coaster. So you only have yourself to blame. But if you're playing this game at six players, you get out, you're the first one out, you kind of are stuck waiting around that 10 minutes for that next game to start. And then people might not want to jump straight into the next game. You might want a little breather, things like that. So it does suffer from player elimination, I'd say.
Yep.
But if you're okay with that, which I am, thankfully, this game's an absolute blast.
Hey, I mean, if it's a game you're playing at a pub, that's just an excuse to go to the bar and refresh your drink.
Yeah, and I have played this at a pub quite a few times. It's really good for that.
Speaking of,
we've played this with real coasters at the bar. Someone had a pen and we drew it on each coaster. That was your skull.
That's what my mind immediately went to. Yeah.
And that's what I was literally about to say. So let's get into our discussion topic for tonight, which is we're going to talk about games that you can take to your local pub, to your local tavern, to your local club if you wanted to, you know, and why you may want to do that, why this is something that we recommend, and what games would be great. And this is the perfect example because it literally is four coasters per player.
Yeah.
Go grab some coasters, grab a pen, and then draw a fancy skull, make your own skull, and some flowers that are all kind of the same, and you've got yourself a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how cool is that? You can go to your local pub with nothing but a pen and then create a whole game out from nothing, right? And so, and because they're actual coasters, you could actually use them as coasters if you really wanted to. You could actually, I mean, I wouldn't use the game
to be board. Fair, they're about the same price as a normal set of coasters.
If you really want to go to the local pub and swipe four coasters per player, and like you really could and just play the game. But I mean,
we're not condoning that.
Well, they're free. Coasters are free. They put them all over. They're crappy cardboard. But point being, going to your local pub and playing games. Have you guys ever done it? I mean, I know you. I mean, I think you have, Ralph. I mean, I don't know about you, Blake, but have you ever done it? Have there any games? But what? And also, then, what reasons do we think people would like to do it?
Yeah. No. I mean, not specifically board games. I've never had that sort of group of friends. I mean, we've always gone to the pub and, obviously you play things like pool and that. But no, I've never even thought about bringing, different kinds of board games or card games or things to the pub to play, but it sounds like a fantastic idea. I can definitely see the appeal of it. I mean, the environment, having a couple of drinks, especially when you're playing these sorts of bluffing games, it gets rowdy real quick, and I can see the fun.
Yeah, it really is. I'm the type of guy that pretty much always has board games in the car.
Yeah.
I know. Who knew?
I have one green Woolworth shopping bag of like small box games that I like to just put in my bag when I'm like going anywhere. Mm. I'm like, I've got a game.
That's it. 100%. Yeah. I think the first couple of weeks I had Cockroach Poker, I took that to a pub. That game doesn't work at a pub, I found, because, halfway through the game, everyone's got like 10 cards in front of them. Mm. Doesn't quite work.
Yep.
Skull is perfect for that. So that works extremely well at the pub. I do want to talk about a game. It's called Il Vino Morte.
Ooh.
Which is an Italian game, but basically it translates to the wine death.
Okay.
So
okay.
Interested.
I always am fascinated by games that are just a small deck of cards, like Love Letter, right? Mm-hmm. So, but what it is each player gets a card in front of them. They do not get to look at that card, okay? They can either flip the card and drink the wine, because it's a bottle of wine, or they can swap it with another player, okay? So you play this with as many players as you want. Mm-hmm. One of the bottle of wines is poison. So you can either drink the wine in front of you or swap it with another player. And then at the end of, when it gets back to your turn, at the end of the round, everyone flips their card. If you're poisoned, you're out of the game. And then you go again until the last player. This game is fantastic at a bar. It's dumb Russian roulette, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's perfect for a pub.
And, you know, I can see the... It's when it comes to that game, that sort of reveal mechanic, I've come to love that mechanic in games. You know, we talked about it before with, you know, the quacks, the bag, revealing cubes, or you know, trying to flip the coasters to see whether you got a skull. That tension.
Yeah, that tension.
Just before the reveal, I think there's very few experiences that beat that sort of experience in a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the pub also has a really good... So here in Australia, if you're listening from international, our pub culture is very much... So we have a very big club culture as well. So a lot of people will go to a local like hotel or a local club to have their drinks. But there are a lot of taverns and pubs around the place, especially in the city and out west where we are. But especially overseas, I've actually been very lucky to have a proper pub... gaming adventure when I was overseas in the UK, and this is some of the reasons why you would like it. So I was at my sister-in-law's house over in she lives in a little town just outside of Winchester in the UK, and literally about 200-300 meters down from their house is the local pub, and the pub was called the Ship Inn. And when I say it's a proper old English pub, it's like the ceiling is only 6'1", so as a 6'5" man myself, like I have to bend under all the cross beams. But I've got to admit, they got it right over there. Mm. So their pubs are all like, you know, they have tab culture. So yeah, you open a tab with them and do that. And then it was in the middle of winter. It wasn't the middle of winter. It was summer for them, but it was like towards the end of summer coming into autumn. So it was actually kind of pretty cold. So we would actually walk down from my sister-in-law's house with a game of Garnish on Clever, and we went into the pub and we sat by the window with the fire roaring, and we whipped out the game. We were literally playing it for about an hour and a half, and we just order a beer or two, they bring it over, we'd be playing the game, and then a couple of people would come by and ask us, hey, what's that? We'd tell them it's, yeah, sexy artsy, as we like to do on this podcast.
Ooh.
And and then, you know, we'd get another round, and then we kept playing. We played for about a good hour and a half, 2 hours. And then we left. And what was really cool about it was it's kind of really surreal, like playing it, because it kind of makes it an event without being a fancy event, right? You know, like I can go and like have Georgie play a board game, right? So let's play a game. What game do you want to play? Oh, I don't know. Let's play, you know, Seven Wonders Duel or Splendor Duel, whatever. Like a two-player game. We go grab it off the shelf, come to our table, we set it up, and maybe we have a drink or something like that, and then we finish, and then, oh, okay, back to the couch, and we go and, you know, watch TV or whatever. But when we went to the pub, it felt like a thing to do. It was not like, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. It felt like an event.
Yeah.
It's like an outing.
It felt like an outing, right? It felt like we are going to the pub to spend time together, and the event that we wanted to play is play this game together.
Yeah.
And there was actually really, like, if you're listening to this and you have a partner and you're thinking, oh, you know, like, legitimately, just go to a location, play the game, and then you're at like the local tavern or whatnot, get a couple of drinks and actually make an event of it.
Mm.
I really can't recommend it enough. It was really cool to do because, you know, you've got the vibe and the culture of like the other people around you. So you've got like the murmur of people around you, and you're playing a game. You've got beers in hand. I mean, in Australia, you know, you can go grab your pub schnitty, you know, grab that, get that, come over, eat it whilst you're going. And I don't know about you guys, but something about like taking a game out of your house and into the wild, if you will. I don't know, something about that just makes me go, it like I said, it turns it from just this is a game to an event.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I think it's definitely something that's, you know, I've sort of, well, I guess now open my eyes to, I definitely will be doing it. I've already started, you guys have pulled me in. I've already started, every time I go out, I look at my, albeit limited shelf at the moment, and go, which game can I bring? Which game can I put in the car? Cool. Not just to, you know, because I've planned to, but just in case we get to a point.
You never know.
I have got this to play. Who's up for a game? That's, you know, it. I've already started that. My collection started to go. So, no, I definitely will be going to a pub and making it an event.
Actually, I've done the same thing as you just mentioned. My cousin Anthony and I, we literally just break out Fugitive. If we've got a couple of hours to kill and we're at the bar.
Love Fugitive.
We've played Fugitive on a number of occasions because it's literally, you can play it in a small space and a little bar stool table sort of thing, because only one player is actually playing the cards and the other player is just ticking boxes. But I've also had it, like I've played some Roll and Writes like Railroad Inc. As well, because that's quite portable and just lots of little things like that. I've even, like, my wife and I went to a cafe and we were like, oh, we're way too early for this, but we can still sit outside. We can't really go home at the moment. We're like doing things. I got Rez Arcana in the car. Do you want to just play it? And I'm like, yeah, all right. So we've played that, just waiting for a cafe to open up.
That's great. Right. We had a similar sort of thing, which is we were down, we flew to Adelaide for a engagement party. And we were all staying at the hotel, myself, my family, and some extended family, excuse me. And we, I then went and found, oh, there's actually a little game store just around the corner from the hotel. So I literally went to the game store and I'm like, saw The Mind. And I went, oh,
that works well.
I've heard about The Mind and I got it. And then we came back up to like the eating area of the hotel. And there was nothing going on at that moment, but we were just kind of loitering around, didn't really have much to do. And I said, hey, bought this game called The Mind, you all want to play? And then I was like, yeah, how do we play it? And then one thing led to another, and all of a sudden we have us like around the table, everyone with cards in their hand, and then teaching these people how to play, my family how to play a game. Like, games are so good at providing, you know, I say like something to do,
yeah,
but they're also very good at also, as I keep talking about, like these shared experiences, because we can all go, hey, remember that time when we played that game and when we didn't have anything to do? Like, oh, remember that time we went to the pub and we played Fugitive and blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of memories being created out of this. And I think sometimes playing a game at your home, the game itself needs to be good. Otherwise, they can be quite forgettable.
Mm.
But by taking it somewhere, you know, the fact that you have Rez Arcana in the car. Like, we went to a cafe and they were closed. And then we decided, what the hell? Let's play a game, right? Like, that novelty in and of itself.
Yeah, like, I remember that game better than I remember the ones we played at home, for sure.
Yeah,
exactly.
I just want to flip it a little bit, a different perspective on this. A lot of the venues actually like that too. So, as you know, Nee, I've been organizing the Blood on the Clock Tower at Ingleburn Bowling Club. Yep. And they're more than thrilled to have us there because we go through drinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
The beer shed at Lumiere is Lumiere. They're actually open to having actual board games there. They got a little section then, like, you know what, we're open, you want to come in and set up Catan, go for it.
Yeah.
Because people are buying drinks. So the venues are actually liking the fact that it gets people to the venue. If you know, if you're happy to spend 3 hours here, go for it, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think as well, in a post-COVID world, a lot of people have gotten very insular, and rightly so, right? And people have been worried for quite a few years, but now as we come out of the other end, a lot of people are now starting to think, and a lot of local businesses, like you said, are starting to go, hey, we need to get people in the door. How do we get them in the door? And every hospitality venue, it's got table and chairs.
Yep.
Yep.
Mate, if, like, if you let me bring a drink, or let me bring my game, I'll go buy your stuff.
No, yeah. I think it's not every place welcomes it. Like, if it's a place very busy cafe, they want people in and out, they're not going to want you to open a deck of cards.
No, that's right. And this is why we're kind of talking about pub culture, pubs and taverns. Like, the idea of, like, this is a place for you to come and be with people, like, and hang with your friends, and then we'll provide you some drinks. Like, that's what I think a lot of pubs and taverns obviously are. Like, they are not... Like, you're right, Ralph. Cafes are very much, we're here to serve you food. You get in, you whilst you're ordering food and ordering stuff, we want you in and out. Most cafes are. But pubs are not like that. Pubs want you there because they want... It doesn't matter if, like, so long as you're buying drinks, they don't care. Or they're buying food. Or, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, those kind of places. I think... Is there any other games that you have... that you think would be good, Ralph, to take to a pub? I mean, you are probably the resident expert in playing a lot of games, but are there any games you can think off the top of your head that would be really good?
Yeah, there's a couple. Generally, any sort of quick card game, not a lot of table space required. People that get like little bluffing games, or people that get people physically involved in a way, it's just funny. So if you can do that while drinking, I'm not talking about like your throw burritos or anything like that. Cause if you do that while drunk, someone's falling down the stairs.
Security will probably ask you to listen, please, sir.
You might hit the security guard with a burrito.
Or maybe he'll play. But even then, I don't want to cop the security guard throwing a burrito at my head. Like any games you can think of, like obviously I've said Garnshaw and Clever. I mean, Skull is obviously a great one. Are there any other games that you could recommend to people that are Fugitive? You've already said any other ones on top of that?
I'd recommend a game that I've got with me tonight actually to show you guys. So this game is, I'd say, fairly well known in the board game terms of the last few years. It is called Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. And I'm just going to teach you how to play because it's so simple. Imagine we're drinking. We're all drunk. Don't have the attention span. One of you's falling asleep. I'm like, hey, you bring out this deck of cards. You can tell them this is Snap. But you flip the card from your hand and you say the word taco. Okay, but the picture is actually of a cat or a goat or a cheese or a pizza. Right. Any one of those. But so I say taco, then it'll be Nee's turn.
And I have to say cat.
Yeah. And if that was a cat, if that matched, you snap it.
Right.
Okay. You have to go in order. So taco, cat, goat, cheese, pizza. Like, you have to say it in order. At any point, if you say the wrong word, if I say taco, cat, and then you say pizza, which is incorrect, you take the pile because you stuffed up the momentum of the thing. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are some.
If I snap the pile, what happens? Do I get the pile or do I give it to someone?
Oh, sorry. I might have this a little bit wrong. If you're the last player to snap it, you take the pile. Everyone's got to snap it. If you're the last player to snap, you get the pile.
My poor dainty hands.
So the winner is the person who gets rid of the deck from their hand.
Yep.
But they have to be the first player to snap.
Right.
Okay, when you have no cards in your hand.
Yeah.
But you still have to say the words Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza.
Yeah.
But you don't play a card. It's harder than you think. There are some special ones.
That's a groundhog.
That's a groundhog. When you play the groundhog, everyone has to like pound their knuckles on the table, like a little drum roll. If you're the last player to do that, or you do the wrong thing, you take the pile. Okay, so there's three different ones. This is a narwhal. What that one is you have to like clamp your hands on your forehead like you're a unicorn. Okay, well, like you're a narwhal in this case. If you're the last player to do that, you take the pile. And the last one, I will find it. One second.
What is it? The gorilla.
The gorilla.
Of course.
That is, you beat your chest like Donkey Kong. Okay? If you're the last player to do that, you take the pile. That is the game. Okay? But if you have no cards in your hand and someone was to play the gorilla, you have to be the first player to slap your chest. You play this game while drinking at a pub, it is just hilarious.
I can see that getting pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's a silly kids game. Kids love it. You can play it not at the pub, sure, but it's better if you do.
There's a lot of things that I think are better at the pub than they're doing at home. But that's for a different podcast, and maybe for when we open up Patreon and they're Patreons only. Who knows? I don't know where I'm going with that. I was trying to come up with something fun to bring it to the
I don't think people want to pay to see that, Nick.
was talking about talking, but that's all right.
Okay.
You know, or drinking beer is better at a pub rather than drinking beer at home.
That is true. So that is true.
I don't know what you guys were thinking about. We're all going crazy now. We've all had the faux pas. We've all getting crazy. So I think it's time for us to wrap it up there. If you did enjoy tonight's podcast, thank you so much for listening. We hope you listen to more. Please go to our website, which is www.boardgamegateway.com. There you'll find links to all of our social medias, Facebook, YouTube, our Discord server as well. We are hoping to become a lot more active this year, and we're getting back into the groove of things. But look, if you did enjoy it, please give us a rating on iTunes and Spotify, all that fun stuff. I'm going to say goodbye before these guys start building more card pyramids and interrupting my flow. Devin Blake, with that, I'm going to say bye.
I can't get this at all.
Bye, guys. See you next week.
See everyone. I had to build. I mean,
I'm just fine. Same business.